Welcome into the latest edition of ESPN FC. I'm Dan Thomas. Later on in the show, Shaka and Stevie here to reflect on a very impressive victory for Manchester United against Brighton. There's only one place to start, isn't there? And that's in La Liga. Barcelona taking on Atletico Madrid today. It would finish 2-2, meaning that Real Madrid remain top of the table, 1 point clear of Barca. Madrid in action later this week against Getafe have the chance to go 4 clear. So much to talk about from this 90 minutes. Ali Moreno and Craig Burley with us. Let's go overall, shall we, Craig? 2-2, fair?
I think as an away side, Atletico Madrid could feel a little bit unlucky they didn't take 3 points. I think they looked a better, more cohesive side. I know Barcelona dominated possession, as you would expect. But I like some of Atletico's passing. It was really sharp and really crisp. But Carrasco was fantastic down that left-hand side. The bench was strong. They defended well. They snuffed Suarez out, who hardly got a kick. Obviously, there were a lot of penalties in the game, a lot of VAR involvement and stuff like that. But I actually think, although Barcelona were desperate for the win, of course they were, to try and put some more pressure on Real Madrid, I think Atleti done enough to take the 3 points away. And when you look at their performance, and I know they've had injuries this season, it's a real head-scratcher why, that apart, there's so many points behind in this title race.
It's interesting Craig picks up on Atleti, Ali, because this wasn't the dirty, rolling over Atleti that maybe we're used to seeing in these big matches. They came and they came to play toe-to-toe with Barca, and they almost took all 3 points.
And they're able to do that because Barcelona allows so much time and space in transition. And what we have pointed time and time again for Barcelona is that any team that has a little bit of change of pace in that transition and a little bit of quality going forward is going to create problems for them. And the best example of that is the first penalty kick, in which Yanni Carrasco, basically at the midfield line, turns on Pique, goes on speed, and there is nobody to catch up. There's just not enough speed in transition for Barcelona, and they did that time and time and time again, whether it was the late run of Yanni Carrasco, whether it was Saúl Ñíguez coming from the midfield. Late on, it was Morata who was running in behind. Llorente was creating problems as well. And any time that Atletico Madrid was able to play through the initial pressure of Barcelona, there was a counterattack that, if properly executed, would have meant that Atletico Madrid would have won this game.
What was wrong with Barca today? Why were they so vulnerable to these attacks, Craig?
I just think they have been for a while. And they are so open and have been so open, and they're creaking at the back. They've got a wonderful goalkeeper that's really kept teams at bay many, many times in Ter Stegen. But they have been very, very open, and they're not as compact. When I think about them against Real Madrid, I think about Real Madrid, who seem more organised in the defensive aspect of the game. Not necessarily that they've got more defensive players, but seem more organised. It seems as if they work on that aspect of the game the same as they work on their offensive aspect. It seems to me that for Barcelona, they just sort of fell in a position where they can. And as Ali said, Atletico could have exploited them today. Look, I think they have a coach here who's like a rabbit in the headlights. Yeah. I know he's coached for many, many years. I know he's hugely experienced. But not at coaching Barcelona. Not at going for the league title. Not up against Zidane and Real Madrid. And it's shown, because you look at the team selection, you look at the substitutions, you look at the fact that it was 90 minutes almost in the clock before he brought Antoine Griezmann on. Now, I understand, you know, Griezmann's not had the best of seasons, but as Ali, I think before we came on air, he was not very complimentary about Luis Suarez, and correctly so. He's a fantastic player, but he never got a kick. He never got a snuff from Jimenez and Felipe, the two centre-halves, yet he never made a change until that board went up for injury time. That's terrible management when you need to pick up all the points and you've got a striker who's not playing well. Even if it meant putting Messi up front, bringing another midfielder or two on and reshaping the team. It didn't have to be Griezmann, but he had to do something to change it up, and he did little or nothing when it was too late.
How did you describe Luis Suarez, Ali, for those who weren't listening pre-show?
He was running like he had a piano on his back. And I'm being kind to him. I really think, and I'm not part of the medical staff of Barcelona, nor do I pretend to be a doctor, but you look at him running, And there's some serious difficulties there. He looks uncomfortable with his movement, and yet he was out there for 90 minutes. When Craig is talking about the organization or lack thereof of Barcelona, today there was a change in formation by Quique Setién in which he puts out a diamond midfield. And when they were at their best today, well, it did look like a diamond when Ricky Puig at the very front of that, then behind him would be Sergio Busquets, and on the side would be Vidal and Rakitic. But the problem for Barcelona is that they cannot maintain any sense of order and organization on the field. So that diamond became a cubic zirconium as the game wore on. And so there is people running all over the place. There is no sense of organization. There is no sense of spacing. And then when that happens, they revert back to something that has bailed them out in the past. And they said, we're going to give the ball to Messi and see if he does something. And if he's able to pick out a pass or make a run or score a goal, and somehow we win this game. Instead of continuing to play their way through the midfield and trying to trust the players and the talent they have in that area of the field, see if they can break through. When they get disorganized, and it happens more times than not, that's when they get stretched, and now you're dependent on individual players, and it just doesn't happen. As for Luis Suarez, I have to tell you again, I felt bad for the guy. He doesn't look right to me, but I guess for Quique Setién, he looked all right enough to leave him out there for 90 minutes. I would have thought that the substitution, not only of Antoine Griezmann, but Ansu Fati would have come earlier. They didn't, and in the end, 2-2. And it's fortunate at times for Barcelona for it to be 2-2.
Let's take it through then some of the key incidents in this game, starting off with Diego Costa's own goal. Rather unfortunate, Craig, from an unfortunate area as well, it seemed. Anything you could have done about that?
No, there's nothing he could have done, because what happened here was the barking at the front post was actually poor. I can't remember who it was, but I think they were marking Busquets. It might have been Thomas Partey, but I'm not sure. But he allowed the Barcelona player to get ahead of him. And that resulted in a small flick-on, which meant Diego Costa saw it late. And I think he saw in his body language at the goal. He said, well, there's basically nothing I can do about it because I couldn't react quickly enough. But the marking at the front post was what made this problem happen, because the player got wrong side and Costa was left with nothing that he could do, and it was an unfortunate incident for, and it just hit him low enough that it wasn't too bad an incident for Diego Costa.
He had the chance then to almost immediately make amends, Ali, given the penalty after Carrasco won it. Had the penalty saved. VAR, though, took a look. Ter Stegen just off his line. Was this the right decision?
It is the right decision, and much like the offside calls that people get crazy about, because, well, is it an inch, is it not an inch, is it too close and not too close, what are we doing, the spirit of the game, so on and so forth. The law of the game is very clear in that the goalkeeper cannot gain an advantage by stepping off his line. Ter Stegen did, makes a save, and correctly brought back by VAR.
Diego Costa then didn't take the penalty again, Craig. Saul came and scored it. If you were Costa, would you have fought harder to take it, or were you more than happy to shirk the responsibility?
No, I don't think he was shirking the responsibility. I think he was accepting the fact that his penalty was saved and there was a bigger picture. Personally, myself, I would have taken it again. But, you know, sometimes a decision like that's, I think it was a good, well, clearly it was a good decision, but I think it was a sensible decision at the time. But it just comes down to the player himself. And, you know, if Costa felt he wanted to take it, he's big enough, ugly enough and strong enough, I'm sure he could have got it off Sal, who actually did take two penalties in the game,
yep.
As you know.
Yeah, indeed. We'll talk about the second one in a moment. Let's talk about the Messi penalty that came 4 minutes into the second half before we talk about the Panenka. Was it a penalty for you, Ali?
No, I don't think so. I don't think there's contact, but the angles that the camera showed us didn't exactly make it very clear and obvious for the call to be overturned. And so therefore, Felipe, who lunges, and when he lunges, that's the moment in which he gets into trouble. If there's any contact at all, I think it's minimal at best. I don't think it was a penalty, but Felipe asked for it once he went reaching for a ball that he had no chance to getting to.
Craig?
Yeah, I think the issue here was it wasn't too dissimilar to the one given against Carrasco by Arturo Vidal. There might have been a little bit more contact, but it was a little bit similar in terms of the leg was just thrown out there. And I think for that reason, one, the referee gave it, and two, VAR decided that they were never going to overturn it, because the similarities with the one that Atleti got were, you know, probably 60-40.
as a man who used to take penalties, wasn't bad, was it, from Messi, considering the pressure?
Well, he doesn't feel the pressure. He's not going to get sacked if Barcelona don't win the league. So as much as he wants to do it, look, at the end of the day, he's got the confidence. He's got a gazillion goals again. He carries the team, and it's just unsurprising. So maybe one day a goalkeeper will just stand there and make him look rather silly.
A filthy way to get your 700th goal. And we thought that would be it, Ali. You know, despite the problems, this will be it. Messi's incredible penalty saved the day, keeps Barca in this title hunt. However, as Craig mentioned, another penalty to Atleti. Saúl takes it 2-2. This a penalty for you?
Yeah, and it is a fortuitous contact, if you will, an accident, if you will, from Semedo, but there is no doubt that he does clip Yannick Carrasco from behind and gets him off balance and impedes his progress. And so, therefore, I don't think the referee had any choice but to make the call. As the fact that Semedo meant it or didn't mean it, well, that doesn't really matter, because in the end, he takes Carrasco down, and I don't think there's a doubt this was a penalty.
Craig mentioned it early on. When Quique Setién was hired, a lot of people in La Liga who cover La Liga were very excited about the fact that this is the sort of manager that Barcelona need. He plays exactly their sort of style. But Craig said it at the time, and I think others did as well, in the sense that it's one thing doing it for a smaller club, but doing it for Barcelona with that personnel is a very different matter. That point's kind of been proved, hasn't it, over the last few weeks?
Well, I think, Dan, what you just mentioned there is very key with that personnel, because you're dealing with a different group of players and a different group of personalities and players who have been very successful at the highest level with national team, with club team. They've achieved everything there is to achieve in the game. And so, therefore, when you come into that locker room, it doesn't really matter what you have done in the past with other teams. Those things are not all that important. What matters is what you do in the training sessions with Barcelona, and then the plan they put forth, that you believe it as a player, that they buy into it. And I think what has been clear over the last week or so, when we have heard rumblings coming out of the Barcelona locker room, is that they're not really buying into it. Now, some of it has to do with the fact that some of these Barcelona players are pointing the finger everywhere else other than themselves, and they're not really taking responsibility for what's going on. But outside of that, you can also say that there are moments here where Quique Setién hasn't had, I wouldn't say the experience, I would say the experience with Barcelona, the experience in this hot seat to be able to deal with what is a complicated job, because there's pressures not only coming from the locker room, but there's pressures coming from the outside and the front office and the board and all the expectations that come with a club that has achieved so much. But this version of Barcelona is flawed. And so regardless of who's sitting there, they're going to run into some challenges, because at the very end, there are holes in this team that you cannot just plug with Messi scoring a big goal or Ter Stegen making a save.
How do we say this? Craig, were you right?
About what?
About how hiring Setién was a mistake.
Well, he's got to the end of the season to try and prove it. Look, I don't know. Certainly on the face of it at the moment, he's making some poorish decisions. I was playing for the national team once, and it was a big game. It was a qualifier. And our coach said to us, listen, if we get this team on the back foot, their manager doesn't know how to change it in-game. People get the wrong idea of coaching sometimes. The best managers and head coaches are not the ones that are the best on the training ground. They're not necessarily the ones that pick the best team, but they're the ones that make the best decisions during the 90 minutes plus. Because that's key, because the game is fast and furious, and the other teams do things differently, or people make mistakes, or somebody's having a poor game, and you got to make those big decisions. Well, let's just take today in isolation. His decision-making was pretty horrendous. He sat on his hands, he watched his team got hit in the counter-attack, he watched his main striker hardly get a kick of the ball, and he did little or nothing. And that tells me at the moment he's sitting on the bench and he's struggling to come up with a concrete way forward, how he could have changed that game. And if that continues, there's only going to be one winner in La Liga, and it will not be Barcelona under this manager.
Real Madrid win 5 of their next 6, the final 6. They are champions no matter what Barcelona do. Ali, is it over?
It's over. I gave you 80-20 a couple of days ago, yeah. And now that's 90-10, and it's really trending in the wrong direction for Barcelona. The only hope that Barcelona have is the game that Real Madrid has against Athletic Bilbao.
Yeah.
And that somehow they lose that game, but they still have to drop points somewhere else, and Barcelona has to be perfect. And that in itself is a part of the equation that I don't think is 100% correct for Barcelona. I don't think they can be perfect. They have shown time and time again over the last couple of weeks that they can lose points to anybody that they play against. And so therefore, I really think that this is all about Real Madrid. They seem the more solid team. They seem to be the more organized team, and therefore the team that will come out winners of La Liga this year.
Is it done, Craig?
Yeah, I think it's hard to see Real Madrid making too many, if any, mistakes, and hard to see Barcelona going on a complete winning run to the end of the season. Even with the morally corrupt signing they made to try and get themselves over the line, they're still not going to do it. How much fate will that be?
The Leganés legacy lives on. Boys, before I let you go, I just want to switch gears completely and get your thoughts on Leroy Sané. It was confirmed today he will be going to Bayern Munich at the start of the next season. Craig, this looks like a brilliant signing for them.
Yeah, I saw ESPN FC tweet something out about Lewandowski, Gnabry and Sané saying what a great front three. They must have forgot about somebody called Kingsley Coman, who's not a bad player either. So you add that into the mix and they've got options. Look, Leroy Sané will have to play well to get game time. Bayern Munich have obviously pushed for him very publicly, too publicly in my opinion, but they've got the man. And it's up to him now to perform to a consistent level. He has had a very good time at Man City, but sometimes it's been a roller coaster. He needs to get on more of a flat plane in terms of his performances because, as I say, they've got other options, but it's a great move for him. And I'm sure Man City might use the money or some of that money to try and shore up a back line that's been creaking now for 12 months or so.
Ali, on his day, he is one of the best in the world to watch, isn't he?
Yeah, Leroy Sané, it's interesting from the Manchester City perspective, the fact that I think they're going to miss a player like him, and I think they have missed him this season, a guy that when every team is just kind of dropping off or every team is making it difficult because they're condensing the space, he can create space for himself, and he has a change of speed and that change of pace over distance and in tight spaces. And I think at Manchester City, he had a perfect club for him to succeed. And yet, as Craig just alluded to, there were inconsistent times for Leroy Sané, whether that was his relationship with Pep Guardiola or whatever the case may have been. He needs now to find that consistency and that flat plane that Craig just mentioned. But I don't know whether he's going to get that at Bayern Munich or not, because I really think that in him signing with Bayern Munich, he's thinking, I'm going to step in and play. There are options for Bayern Munich, and that's a position in which they have a lot of variety. And a lot of players that can step in, because you're talking about Kingsley Coman on one side, Serkan Aaron on the other side, but don't forget about Alphonso Davies and how good of a player he has been down the left hand side. Now you add all of that together, and Bayern Munich looks great into the future. Leroy Sané just has to find what his best is and make sure that he can showcase that time and time again, game in, game out, week in, week out.
Gentlemen, thank you very much. Just a reminder, ESPN FC back on your screens tomorrow. Some significant matches regarding the top four. Everton taking on Leicester. It's West Ham against Chelsea. We'll be discussing those games and a lot more. Manchester United moved back up to fifth in the table after a convincing 3-0 victory over Brighton today, within touching distance of the top four once again. 2 points off Chelsea, who do have a game in hand. Just three adrift of Leicester, though, who are starting to get dragged into this fight. Stevie Nicol and Shakir Hislop with me. Stevie, this was Manchester United, surely at their very best that we've seen under Oli.
Yeah, no question. I think back to before the break, and I was always questioning, are Man United always going to be a counter-attacking team? And are they going to look comfortable and win games away from home? Well, this performance today answered those questions, because the three goals, the third one was a counter-attack, but the other two, it was incessant pressure and they broke them down. And that has been a problem, certainly away from home. So I think it's very difficult to try and poke a hole in what's going on at United now. Three away games of the last four. I know one was in the FA Cup at Norwich. And they've won two and drawn one, which was always going to be a toughie at Spurs. So everything right now is going great for Manchester United, and if they can keep producing the chances and scoring the goals the way they are right now, then they're marching to that top four, no question.
Is it as simple as the addition of Bruno Fernandes has just changed everything, Shaq?
Yes, it has. I think Bruno Fernandes has changed Manchester United from an average team to a good team. And now you put Paul Pogba in that, makes them even better. And as we've said about Paul Pogba all along, is he doesn't fit. He doesn't improve an average team. He does make a good team better. Bruno Fernandes has made United good. Paul Pogba has made them better. Martial has looked as happy playing his football as we've seen him at Old Trafford. Rashford has hit his strides, and Greenwood has come in and not looked at all out of place, as a matter of a whole lot more than that. So all of a sudden, United look like a team destined for the top four.
Shaka mentioned Mason Greenwood. It's interesting, you take a look, Fernandes, Pogba, Martial, Rashford, they're all pretty much guaranteed now to start. Mason Greenwood putting him very much in that category as well. How good was that opening goal, Stevie?
I mean, it's a great goal. It shows the confidence he has. He's not got his head up, and he's, you know, the first thing in his mind is, can I score? You know, most young players, the first thing in their mind is, well, you know what, I want to look after somebody who's more important than me. This kid is full of confidence. He's got a beautiful left foot. And that was a smart move. You know, the fact that this has gone, the strike has gone through the defender's legs is no fluke. You know, he's dummied them to make him stretch, and then he's hit it to the near post. So this kid is absolute quality, but I'm not quite ready to start talking about him as a regular yet. He's had a couple of games where United have done well, and he's shone.
Stevie, there's a lot of speculation about Jadon Sancho and about whether or not he's going to move to Manchester United. If you were United and you only could buy one player, would he be your number one target, considering the options they already have in attack?
You know, the greatest manager Man United ever had, Alex Ferguson, always had plenty of ammunition going forward. Always, particularly centre forwards. So, listen, if you buy Sancho, now you've got some fantastic competition for that front three. You know, do you put Rashford in the middle and play Sancho on one wing and Greenwood in the other? Or do you keep Martial in the middle? Does Greenwood come off the bench? You know, again, This is something that Fergie always had. He always had plenty of ammunition going forward. And quite frankly, I think Manchester United right now look settled at the back. They look settled in the middle. And so the more talent you have going forward, the more chances you'll create, the more goals you score, and guess what? The more games you win.
What do you think, Shank?
Listen, I understand what Stevie's saying, but as I look at Manchester United, I still think there are questions over the left back. Is Shaw really your long-term solution? We continue to question whether David De Gea is still the goalkeeper that he once was, and will he be the goalkeeper going forward? But as good as they are going forward, I think that's the least of their concerns. That front three, as they used today, and if you want to add Fernandes and Pogba, call it a front five, that's the least of their concerns. But if you get the opportunity to sign somebody like Jadon Sancho with his quality at his age, you take it. As long as the price is right, you take it. And those are the problems that every manager wants to have.
Barring a complete disaster, Stevie, in the running for United, Ollie's there next season, isn't he? He's done enough even just after this break to solidify his place in charge.
Yeah, I mean, it would have had to have been an absolute shocker for him to lose his job. You know, there's no question they have made a decision that Ole Gunnar Solskjaer is going to be there for certainly this year and probably next year. And then, depending on where they sit and depending on what sort of progress, if any, has been made. So it would have had to have been a shocker. It has been nothing close to that. It's been the complete opposite. And so, yes, there's no way possible that Ollie's not there at the start of the next Premier League season.
The excitement resonating from Stevie is similar to after Liverpool winning the league, speaking so positively about Manchester United, very much his favourite thing. Stevie and Shaka, thank you very much. More from the boys over on Extra Time, which you can check out on YouTube. 4 points then, still the difference at the top of the Italian table. Juve and Lazio both registering victories today. To reflect on them, we welcome Stuart Robson to the show. Robbo, I know it's late. Why are you in your pyjamas?
Well, I was watching the game in pyjamas, so I thought I might as well stay in them. You know, it's called fashion, Dan, I think. That's something you wouldn't know too much about.
Are they silk?
No, funnily enough, no. Cotton, I think.
All right, let's get to the action, shall we? Juve against Genoa, not really a lot happened until Dybala opened the scoring in some style. He's looked good over the last few weeks.
He certainly has. He's playing in that sort of centre-forward role, but he's not really playing as a centre-forward. He's dropping off, coming deep to get the ball. That's one of Juve's problems. In the first half, there was only one player that made a run. Ronaldo made one run in behind where the goalkeeper made a good save. The rest of the time, they're coming short to get the ball. And that was the only way they were going to score. Dybala came short, great little turn, and as he's been doing in recent weeks, bent it into the corner. He scored some great goals in the last few games. He looks probably the best he's played at Juventus at the moment.
We saw cracking goals overall, because then Cristiano Ronaldo stepped up. Vintage Ronnie, give him a little bit of space, opens up, bish, bash, bosh, no problem.
Well, he had two good shots from distance in the first half, which Perrin saved. Then he had one where he made that forward run, which I was talking about, the only forward run they made in the first half, and he got a shot away. And then that one was brilliant. You know, the defender backed off. He then took it to the right-hand side and bent it with power into the corner. The goalkeeper had no chance. And every time he did shoot, he hit it with power, and he looked to be good, as he is, very good technically. But he still isn't making enough runs in behind. He's not dynamic enough when he's working with the other players, but a good finish from him.
And then Douglas Costa got involved.
Yeah, he came on as a late sub, I think for Bernardeschi, or maybe he came on for Dybala, and he did exactly the same thing. When the ball came back to him, he found himself in a bit of space, just chopped it onto his left foot and bent it into the corner, and the goalkeeper didn't even dive. Three great goals, but I would say that's one of Juventus' problems at the moment. They have to score great goals because they're not getting enough players in the box. They're not making runs in behind the opposition. So they have to score those good goals rather than the little tap-ins. And that would be the worry against a side like Atalanta, which they've got in a couple of weeks' time. They've got some big games coming up.
The best of the three for you, Robbo?
I'm going to go with Dybala because the other two are good, brilliant strikes. But Dybala still had to turn away from a couple of challenges. He still had to manipulate it onto his left foot, and he still had the composure to finish it into that far corner. He knew exactly what he was doing. Great goal.
Preceding that, of course, we saw Lazio. They're making a habit of it, aren't they? Coming from behind to get the win, to keep the pressure on Juve. What did you make of their performance overall today?
I thought they were excellent today. You could really see the shape they were trying to play. They got their wing-backs high up the field. They were helped by the way Torino played with five at the back and then a sort of diamond in midfield. So it meant the wing-backs and the wide centre-halves could get up at every opportunity. Radu, the left-sided centre-half, kept on hitting those sort of diagonal balls for Milinkovic-Savic to make his runs into the box. There was some good play between Caicedo when he was on the field and Immobile. The pass from Luis Alberto for the first goal was a brilliant one. I think most people thought he was going to try and bend it down the outside of the third centre-half, but he played it in between them. Immobile does what Immobile does, made the right run and then passed it into the corner. I was impressed with the quality of their play. I was impressed with their teamwork. The one thing that would worry me now is that Caicedo and Immobile are both suspended for the next game and they look particularly tired. They were tired against Fiorentina. They look tired in this game to a certain degree.
They are running out of matches, though, overall to try and close that gap. Juve don't really look like dropping points, although you mentioned they've got some big matches coming up. How would you split this? Let's play the percentage game. I like this, Robbo. How would you split it?
I think Juventus are going to 80% to win the title. But they've got to play Atalanta, who at the moment are the best side in Serie A. And they've got to play Lazio. If they lose to Atalanta, that will put the pressure on against Lazio. And if Lazio perform to the way they can cause them a problem. But Lazio are going to lose a game from now to the end of the season. So Juventus, for me, by about 80%.
Before I let you go to bed, Rob, what room are we in? I'm trying to work it out. I don't.
Well, it's I'm in my study at the moment.
Oh, OK.
So we've got a nice chair in the background. I know you like a bit of pink in the background.
Yeah, nice.
I'm at my desk at the moment, looking out the. I would be looking out the front window if it wasn't dark. But I'm in the study.
I'm glad that it's dark. Thank you very much, Stuart Robson. Off to bed you go in your silk pyjamas. Just a reminder, plenty of Italian action to come on ESPN tomorrow. I tell you what, we've got a lot of it on both ESPN Plus and the ESPN channels as well. It all starts with Bologna taking on Cagliari. That's at 1:25 Eastern on ESPN. If you prefer on Plus, it's Inter Milan against Brescia. Then after that, Hellas Verona taking on Parma. That's on ESPN. On ESPN 2, it's Lecce against Sampdoria. And on Plus, it's Spal, who play host to AC Milan. Well, that brings us to the end of today's ESPN FC. However you sleep tonight, I hope it's as comfortably as Robbo will in his silk pyjamas. Thank you very much to everyone who's been on. Be sure to stay tuned, though. Shaka and Stevie with us for Extra Time. Welcome into the latest edition of Extra Time. Stevie and Shaka with me. Stevie, what's the fuss with the Guard of Honour? Would Stevie have given Manchester United one in his days? Of course, City will give Liverpool a Guard of Honour when they face off in the Premier League next.
Only because you had to. I believe, I'm trying to remember, we actually got a Guard of Honour early in the 80s. But it wasn't, it was just a nice clap. Either side of us.
Very gentlemanlike.
No, there's not. There's different types of Guards of Honour.
No, there's not.
You can make a tunnel and... Aye, there is.
So your one was claps either side, yes? What other types are there?
Well, you can get those ones that are like that. They'll cover your head and you go through the tunnel.
What with the swords? Right, boys, here we go. What could possibly go wrong?
Do you know
on?
What? I was away with that. Do you know what? I was thinking about that. I don't know why, but I was thinking about a wedding.
Yes. Yeah. I don't think this is a wedding.
Anyway. Yeah. Fair enough.
Good. Has Bruno Fernandes been the best midfielder in the world since the restart of all the leagues, Shaka?
The best midfielder in the world, we're going with.
Yep.
We're just going to skip over best midfielder in the Premier League,
nope.
Which even that's debatable given the kind of form that Kevin De Bruyne has been in. We're just going to skip past all that and go to best midfielder in the world.
Boom.
Okay, Frankie McManaman, if that's where we're going, you've made it easy. No, he's been good, but not the best in the world.
You know the next question, Shaka.
What?
Who's been better?
Kevin De Bruyne, just for starters. Ready to list more? I'm not.
Stevie, you were saying that you think he is the best in the world.
Oh, it is. Yeah, your clever
face,
clubs
your,
coming
your
back.
When you try not to laugh, it tells
well, let me tell you something.
I don't think
there's an argument that he's been more influential. There's not been a more influential midfielder in world football since the restart. I don't think that's in question. Whether he's the best or not is up for debate, but influential? Look at Man United now, to where they were.
What was the hardest tackle they've ever taken and who was it from? Good question.
Easy peasy.
Go on, Stevie.
I got my jaw broken in two places. Playing Norwich in a Super Cup. It was called a Super Cup competition, which was supposed to replace the top sides getting banned from Europe. I think they were talking 86 it was, yeah. So we set up at half-time, and it was Norwich had the kick-off. And back then, they would stick the centre-forward away out wide, stand on the full-back, and just try and smash into him and head the ball back towards goal. And of course, I've called Mark Lawrenson over because I saw the Norwich guy, I can't remember his name right now, coming across, and I went, Lauro, and he's like, ah, yeah, right. Because it was a freezing cold midweek game. There was nobody there. Anyway, the ball got stuck in the air, so Muggins me, eye on the ball, go to header it. Kevin Drinkle it was. Kevin Drinkle. Just hit me from the side. I'm looking straight ahead. He hit me right from the side, smashed me. I broke my jaw there, and I broke it down the middle.
You wrote about
that
this
was an easy question to answer.
You wrote about this in your book, didn't you, Steve? It was Roy Evans, the physio.
Well, the great thing is back then the medical staff we had were absolute top notch, world renowned. Hitting you in the face with a sponge and telling you to get on with it. And that's exactly what happened. Roy Evans came across, hit me in the face with a sponge. It was cold enough. Looked at me. He said, told me to stand up. I stood up. He went like that. Well, I think it's your teeth. We'll get you. Don't worry about it. On you go. Carry on. And off he trotted. I played the rest of the game. Scary.
You played the rest of the game?
I played the rest of the game. Yeah, I played the second half with a broken jaw in two places.
And then obviously you had to have it kind of sealed shut. Did you put shepherd's pie in the blender? How did you get shepherd's pie there?
Oh, like, well, I get completely wired up. So generally when you get wired up, you tend to lose weight.
Right.
I think I'm the only person that was exactly the same weight when I got the wires taken out as when they were put in. Because I just used to blend everything. I blended fish and chips. I blended scrambled egg and toast and beans.
Oh.
I mean, you name it. Shepherd's pie. I blended it and just... down it went. So I never lost a pound. Never lost anything.
Lovely. Is that when you went to see the doctor at 9 a.m. in the morning and he offered you a whiskey? Or is that a different story?
Say that again.
Didn't the club doctor offer you a whiskey at 9 a.m. in the morning when you went round to his house? Oh, no, I made that up.
Oh, that was... Yeah. No. What happened was, I was playing for Scotland in midweek. We played, I believe it was Cyprus. And I had to come off after like 15 minutes. I had a pain right in my chest above my heart. I had no idea what it was. I couldn't run properly. So I come off and I didn't get back. We were travelling to Dundee on the Friday for a testimonial. We're going Friday morning and I didn't get back from Cyprus with Scotland till Thursday night. So I called Kenny and said, look, I've got this problem. I don't know what it is. He went, right, we'll take you around the doctor Friday morning and he can have a look. So we get round the docks, who live round the corner of the Anfield. Now, you're talking about, he was about 73 years old by this stage. And he still had his jammies and his house coat on and his slippers. And we come in, he sits in the front room, yeah, and he sits down. He starts talking away as if we were coming round to visit him. As if he had no idea why we were there. And then he turns round to Roddy and Roy and says, would you like a little? And they were like, no. No, it's a little early. Then. Okay. What seems to be the problem? And that was it. And he went, ah, you'll be all right. And I went to Dundee on the bus.
Brilliant. Oh, man.
I could have collapsed on the bus. I mean, you talk about top-notch medical staff we had. Actually, Dan, I've just remembered. I'll be quick.
Come on.
The one I think you're thinking about... is the one with Gary Gillespie and Nigel Spackman on a Wednesday night before the cup final on the Saturday. Smashed heads in the first half and both of them split their heads open. So they got bandaged up so they could finish the half. They go in at half time and the two of them are lying on the two treatment tables and they need stitched up. So the doctor gets in, and this was the doctor's son, this was the other one, this was a few years later, so the doctor's son has now taken over. And they're in the room, and the doctor turns to him and said, go and get me a whiskey. So the two lads thought, oh, he must be giving us the whiskey for the pain or something, I don't know what that is. Anyway, came back down, had the whiskey, and he went like that, whomp, threw it down, and then off he went and started stitching the two of them up. And I'll tell you what, you want to see the scars they've got. I think there was more than one whiskey in it. Oh, what a mess.
Top-notch medical care at Liverpool Football Club.
Oh, seriously.
Hold on, not just Liverpool. I think everybody can tell those stories. I'll tell a couple of my own here. I played at Reading. We had a guy on loan from QPR. I can't remember his name now. Gets a bad tackle about 15 minutes to go. Physio comes on. Physio is John Hazeldon. Applies you a magic sponge. Tells him to keep playing. He comes off, says, Doc, my leg's really killing me here. He's like, he inspected him. Told him, just put some ice on it for half an hour and you'll be fine. We had a midweek game. He goes back to QPR. They send him for an x-ray. He broke his fibula. His leg was broken. And he played on for 15 minutes.
Oh, my. Where did they find these people?
This was our full-time physio. And then talking about doctors and stitches and having a few drinks. At Newcastle, we had a doctor who was known to have a tipple or two himself during the game. And then one game, I'm trying to remember which one, Robbie Elliott comes off with a big gash on his forehead. The doctor proceeds to put 7 stitches in it. Next morning, Robbie Elliott wakes up, half his scar is open.
Oh.
3 of the stitches missed. Three of these stitches.
Oh.
He missed his scar.
Oh,
oh my goodness. I had to go back next morning. I had to go into the hospital and have it properly stitched.
They sound like cartoon characters.
Ah, goodness me, honestly. I'm sweating.
Hey, that's only, by the way, you think about it, Dan.
Yeah.
We're only talking, there's only me and Shaka. That's just two players. You think how many...
Yeah.
How many players back then were playing and getting that sort of treatment? Scary. I've got a mate of mine, John McGregor. He played for Rangers, but this didn't happen when he was at Rangers because there was a court case. He actually can't walk straight now. His legs actually bent because he hurt his knee in the first half, came off, and whoever the physio was took him into dressing rooms, put him in the bath and filled it with cold water and gave him a hose and said, right, hold that on your leg. Now, John was in severe pain, by the way. This was during the first half. John sat in there till the game was over. And then the guy didn't come back to him till after the game was over. He was sat in a bath. And then, anyway, eventually when he actually did take him back through to the treatment room after everybody had gone after the game, he just bandaged him up. Anyway, as I said, John ended up, all his ligaments were all snapped and everything. What a mess.
Wow.
And because it's taken so long, he actually can't walk straight now. He's got a bend in his knee.
God.
Or a bend in his leg. Can't straighten his leg up.
Right. Away from tales of
terrible doctors. Millions of these.
Stevie, if Real Madrid do La Liga and the Champions League double, surely Sergio Ramos for the Ballon d'Or.
Yeah, right. Well, I tell you, hey, it will come as no surprise to anybody that follows Ramos that he can't play in the next Champions League game because guess what? He got a red card. There's a shock.
What's more difficult, Shaka? Goalkeeping or defending?
Goalkeeping is the most difficult position.
Oh, goalkeeping!
It takes a specialist. It's a specialist to perform.
Goalkeeping?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Oh, goalies. Yeah.
Anybody can be a defender.
Yeah. Goalkeeping's more difficult, Stevie.
Yeah. Anybody can be a defender, but you've got to be an idiot to be a goalkeeper. There you go.
Okay, that is it. Thank you very much, gentlemen. We'll be back tomorrow for more anecdotes of terrible, terrible doctors.
Oh, remember another one? No, I'm only kidding.